Yes, you're wrong. The podcast where we talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love. And we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
No. Stop the music. I will be very brief. I promise. I swear I'll be very brief. I
have something important to say.
We are so busy here tonight, and this is a long show, but I would like to thank my publicist. Thank you for being a public. No, stop the music. Stop the music. I was just getting to the good part. I was almost there.
This was the highlight for you? That was your favorite.
I don't know if Adrian Brody's speech was the highlight for me. It was definitely the low light. And I was sort of like, that entire room is actively thinking we should have voted for Timothy Chalamet in that moment. Like, it's like the speech was so bad. He's now won 2 Oscars, and both times he's won, it's been a disaster. And I'm like, he's actually needs to go back into retirement, and we do not need to see Adrian Brody again.
I
don't want to like get us sidetracked too early, but I do not understand. Every couple of years, there's some sort of narrative around somebody or another in a movie that just does not make sense, and the person wins a bunch of awards, and the entire time I'm like, why? And I think Adrian Brody is like that. He's already won an Oscar, so it's not like, oh, he's overdue for an Oscar. And then it's not like he's been doing a lot of good work lately. Like, he is good in The Brutalist, but I don't know why that makes
that's
him
how the
over
Oscars
a bunch
work, Matt. You well, should but, vote for the work that is submitted, not for the vibes of the person.
But I also don't think that his performance was necessarily way better than like Coleman Domingo or Ralph Fiennes or Sebastian Stan. I think all of those people were doing like more difficult work. It reminded me of when Renee Zellweger won for Judy, and it was like, why are we like, who decided at some point during this season that this was just, she was just going to win everything? It like doesn't make sense to me. There are certain winners that I don't like, you know, like when Brendan Fraser won for The Whale, it's like, I don't like that win, but like that win makes sense to me as to why it happened. Where this Adrian Brody win, I'm like, I don't know like why, like,
I mean,
on
again,
paper
it's
or
the
in ether
easiest,
or anything.
Lowest hanging fruit. Like he
but
gave
is
us-
it? Timothy
yes,
Chalamet
because it's Adrian Brody, and he's playing a
Do
Jew.
Do people like Adrian Brody?
Yeah, as an actor, as an artiste. I mean, he's talented. It's like, and he's in this like epic. It's like literal meth for the Oscar voting body. It's like, give us another hit. Like, it's
you didn't even see The
check,
Brutalist,
check, check.
Though.
I know, but that I'm sure some of the voters didn't either, and they're like, oh, Adrian Brody, sad man dealing with racism and bigotry. Check. 4 hours? Oh, it must be good.
But I'm not going to watch it. No, I think these people watch The Brutalist. I think that they, I'm just confused. Okay, anyways, we're talking about the 2025 Oscars.
Yes.
Which we both watched, although only one of us has watched the movies that were...
Oh my gosh, I still did better than most people, most of the 900 million people watching or whatever.
Shelby saw Wicked once for every other movie that was nominated.
It was a protest rewatch.
It was a protest rewatch. The Oscars for this year, 2025, did we... what were your overall thoughts? Did you like the ceremony? Were you pleased with how it all went? Like, let's talk big picture and then we can go through the categories.
Yeah. I think this was exactly what I expected. And it sort of plays into why my first reaction to the nominees was, oh, that's kind of boring. I think it was very, like, sanitized, very, like, I don't know, just like, yeah, okay, It wasn't exciting. It wasn't necessarily surprising. Even the like upsets, like Timothée Chalamet losing, wasn't that much of an upset because it's Adrien Brody. And I feel like he's won something else for this recently, right? Anyways, so it was just like kind of all over. The musical number choices made zero sense. I had no idea what was happening half the time. And I was just kind of like, okay, yeah, this is totally, absolutely forgettable. And that's it. That's how I felt about it, generally.
Yeah, I think that the Oscars were at a little bit of a disadvantage this year, coming directly after the Golden Globes with Nikki Glaser, which I think was a really fun awards show. And then also this year's Grammys, which is like one of the best award shows I've witnessed in recent history. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this, like, there wasn't necessarily a lot of bad things that happened in it, but there also wasn't that much like interesting or exciting apart from some of the winners. I do think that there were less bad winners this year than there have been in some years past. But yeah, I think that like some of the choices of the show as a whole were sort of strange. Like, not that we need the best song nominees every year, and this year's songs were sort of bad.
No one wanted to hear them. Yeah.
It's like nobody wanted to hear them. But I do think that it was then weird to sort of replace them with a bunch of performances that kind of didn't really make sense. Weird. Like, we started with the Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande like Wicked tribute. Yeah.
Which, but not even a fun tribute. It was like, I was expecting spectacle. I was expecting I'm just Ken.
Yes.
I'm expecting like the entire cast coming out to do the very popular What Is This Feeling?
Yeah.
Choreo. But instead, they start with Somewhere Over the Rainbow. It's like sort of tied into LA. Like there's like this We Love LA art in the back, but it's like, okay, this is not an LA movie at all. And then
it's about Kansas.
They sing the slowest songs from Wicked, and it's just like, it was sad. It was a sobering note to start on. It was like, oh, okay, so we're not going to have fun tonight. Like, it's like there was no pizzazz, there's no spectacle. I mean, yeah, they both looked great. They sang well, like, yeah, they did the job, but again, it just felt kind of okay, perfunctory, like nothing. There's just no pizzazz. I was just like, come on.
And I do
give me something.
And I do think that, like, while I don't necessarily need all five song nominees to be performing, like, there is something that's sort of interesting in having them break up the show. And yeah. Also, I think that sometimes the weirder songs are interesting in like how they're like what they're going to do with them. You know, mm-hmm. It's like would Zoe Saldana have gone up and performed the Al Mal song on a table? Like, I would have watched that. Would Selena Gomez have been performing live? Like, I would also have been interested in that.
Yeah, making a karaoke night. Yeah.
Like, I'm kind of like, huh, fascinating. Where,
yeah,
The Wicked was sort of boring. And then we got this very bizarre James Bond tribute in the middle, which...
So confusing.
I thought when it started, oh, maybe they're going to announce the new James Bond. Like, maybe like this, because we've, you know, been hearing for however long, like, oh, the new one is coming, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, oh, this would be a cool way to announce the new James Bond of, like, during the Oscars. We start with Margaret Qualley, who's just
like, what was
dancing,
she doing there?
Not singing, just dancing.
Yeah, to, like, it was, like, a so thirsty.
Theme song.
It was, like... Because she's going to be the next Bond girl, or someone's rumored to say that or something.
Maybe. But at first when she popped up, I was like, wait, is this like a tribute to The Substance somehow? Of like, is she going to be doing like her aerobics routine as Sue? But no, she does this Bond girl like dance kind of thing with all these people dressed up like James Bond. And then Lisa from Blackpink and Doja Cat and Ray all sang like famous Bond songs.
It was so annoying to me. And they were all so boring. It's like, I don't get it. I didn't Lisa get it at all.
Fine for Live and Let Die, but then Doja Cat sang Diamonds Are Forever, and I was kind of like, one, this is a boring song and whatnot. And then Ray, God love her, she is a good singer. Like, she's a very good singer, but you cannot be doing an Adele song. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. It's like, I don't care how good you are, you should never be singing Skyfall by Adele in a way that.
Well, and why were they? Like, why didn't they have Billie Eilish and Adele come out? Like, you know what I mean? Like, what right. was the relation yes. with these
right.
singers singing? No. It didn't and make why, any sense.
And why were we doing a tribute to James Bond when it was Ugh. Like, it wasn't, like, it, as far as I'm concerned, it wasn't like an anniversary. It wasn't
No,
like
it was the 20 year, or wait. Yeah, it was a 20 year something.
Of what? Mm,
I know. Now I don't understand. Oh, right. No, the 20 years was the Kill Bill. There was... Was there something?
Because then we got to the In Memoriam segment. And last time during the In Memoriam, I think there was complaints about too much motion going on. So yeah. this time there was like nobody was singing or dancing or anything. It was just like a choir, Mozart right? score going. And then yeah. the, yeah. And then this, and then the clips. But then later, Queen Latifah came out to sing a Quincy Jones tribute. Using yeah. songs from The Wiz, which was like,
yeah, what? I was very like, confused by that. I was very confused because bless everyone involved, but why the shout out to Quincy Jones specifically? You know,
I mean, I obviously Quincy Jones was like a big deal. They did a whole yeah. giant thing at the Grammys for him as well. But right. yeah, it. I mean, clearly, I think the thought process was. The songs for Best Original Songs are boring, so we yeah. don't want to have those performed, but we do yeah. need some sort of song element. What can we think up of? Yeah. And then it was like, oh, well, Quincy Jones is a famous like musician who died, so we can do something for him. But I'm sort of like, why didn't somebody just sing a Quincy Jones song during the In Memoriam yeah. segment? And there you go with that. And then... Sure, I do think they should have done a Wicked thing, but I think you should have done it in a more interesting way. And then I don't know why we have the James Bond tribute here. I mean,
oh my God.
I feel like there were other options. Oh, and then also, I guess maybe pivoting into Conan O'Brien, he had a weird sort of song at the beginning about not wasting time.
Yeah, which was too long and not funny.
Right.
It's like,
yes.
It should have been like two lines and then he gets played off or something.
Right. No, it's like the popular is yeah. how you do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like there's the joke yeah. and then it's no, we're done.
Or it's like, yeah, I think honestly, I think you and I have talked about this every single Oscar episode we do, but they shouldn't be afraid to be weird because the weird is like the magic. Like we love the cheesy montages that used to be on old VHS tapes. Like we love a montage and there's room there to play with music from these movies. Like they've done it before. I honestly still think about I'm a Shiny Ball of Light from that one year they turned Harry Potter into a musical. And there was no reason to do that. It was nonsensical, but it was fun. It was fun and it showed a love for movies. Whereas this was just like, I was confused. I was confused the entire 10-minute set of James Bond. I was confused during the Quincy Jones song, which he turns out he didn't even write it. I think he was the producer on that song. So it was like, it was just weird. It was very weird. It felt kind of thrown together and like they didn't really stop to think. It was like a half-baked project they pulled out of their hat. And I don't know, I felt like that same. I'm not a big Conan O'Brien fan and I apologize to all who are. Like I don't know, I've never like cared either way, but I think what rubs me the wrong way is sort of, and it's not as bad as Jimmy Kimmel, who like is so like snarky and like kind of just I don't know how to explain it, but the male energy off of Conan O'Brien with like his, I don't know. It just felt like he was phoning it in a lot of ways. Like the jokes were like, okay, the bits were non-existent. He like pulls out Adam Sandler for like the most dated joke you could imagine. Like people have been joking about Adam Sandler's bad wardrobe since 2010. Like it's like, why why is that the one celebrity like gotcha you can get in this show? Like, it just didn't make sense to me. And a lot of the jokes were just like so lazy, like, oh, Conan always gets stuck in trees. Like, I was like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah. I feel like watching it, I was like, okay, Conan O'Brien is like fine. Like, I think some of his stuff was funny, like the Carla Sofia Gascon joke.
Yeah.
Like, some of it was sort of just like lame. But then people online were like, oh, he's so good. Like, this is so funny. And I don't understand what that was, because I feel like Nikki Glaser's monologue was so good at the Golden Globes. And Conan was just sort of like passable. Like, I'm not going to think about this probably again. I do think, though, that he, some of his like in between kind of things, like when he popped out to do his little like bits in between presenters, I thought was, you know, sort of fun and like moved the show along nicely. He maintained a presence throughout the entire show, which I like, because I think sometimes it's like somebody does the monologue and then pops out once halfway through and it's like, okay, that's all you saw of the host. But yeah, the thing is, I don't think it's actually that difficult to do a good awards show.
Yeah,
you just sort of have to hit the same like 10 beats, but for whatever reason, every time we get one, the producers or whoever are like, oh no, let's try some new things, and then do stuff that nobody wants, and in exchange cut things that everybody was enjoying. Like, even this time, there was really no, like, the presenters themselves were not very funny. Such, like, we did not get good banter from the presenters,
except June Squibb.
Love the her. June Squibb the June Squibb Scarlett Johansson stuff was fun, and I did like Ben Stiller sort of like on the with the floor going up and down. I thought that was like clever. And then I also did really like the Bowen Yang costume designer bit when he came out. Like, I thought that was a funny gag, but yeah, it's like they weren't really doing that much. But then we also, we didn't get montages, we didn't really get clips of the acting packages, which I always find annoying. The best picture clips that were throughout the show were like different lengths, and so it kind of felt like maybe the show was running long, so then they switched to like shorter clips, and then like as the show got towards the end it wasn't running as long or whatever, so then they kind of switched back to the longer ones, which felt bizarre to me. And then also very strange, which you could tell that there was like some shenanigans with the Carla Sofia Gascon situation, because they had originally announced they were going to use the same format to announce the acting winners this year that they did last year, where it's like they have five past winners come out and each do a little like tribute to one of the nominees. But then obviously with the Carla Sofia Gascon thing, it's like no past winner wants to give the tribute to the racist bigot who's in the room. So I think then that got scrapped. But then at the beginning, when both Davine Joy Randolph and
Robert Downey Jr.
came out, they sort of like did a little thing where they kind of talked to everybody in the room. So we didn't see clips, but they sort of like presented all five. And then when we got to the lead categories, I think again, like Emma Stone and Cillian Murphy like did not want to have to, or well, Emma Stone, I guess specifically, like nobody wanted to make her have to do something with Carla. So then they sort of just went back to the montages for that. It was just a lot of weird like things that didn't quite like work the way that they should have. And I think that the show could have been a lot better if you just sort of like, okay, let's like make some of these presenters a little bit more fun, let's swap out some of these musical numbers, and just make it easier. I also think, like you said, like if people are watching the Oscars, it's because they have watched the movies for the most part, or like, or some combination of them. Like, let's do more fun stuff with those movies. Like, whatever year they did the La La Land song, where it was like the people were singing coming into the theater. It's like, that was so, that might have actually been the Golden Globes and not the Oscars. I can't remember, but it's like, but like, that was fun. And I also don't know why they sort of don't do more like pre-taped kind of things.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you could do some fun sort of like SNL-esque pre-tape stuff with like actors who are actually in the movies, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, give me like, I don't know, Robert Downey Jr. taking the substance or something. Like,
yeah. Do like a on the road interview where you put up the substance star and you ask people what their favorite, you know, whatever her name is, role is, and they just like make stuff up because they don't know that it's actually not a real character. Like, you know, there's like ways to engage with movie lovers without being so snooty about it, while also still like respecting that people are here because we like the craft. Like, it's like, I don't think like there's a line of enjoying and celebrating this magical world of movies versus making fun of it and all of that. But they never get close to that line because they're too scared. Like, it's like, I don't know. I just think that there's not, like, even for all their talk and all their speeches about like the love of cinema and cinema bringing us together, like, if you're not willing to acknowledge that the biggest movies tend to be the loudest and the funnest and people are seeking joy and escape, and you're not bringing that into the theater to like get us to sit down and watch you guys jerk each other off, it's like, come on, like, there's got to be some give and take here. And I think, yeah, it just felt like, especially in the hyper sort of politicized world we're in, and especially after this was delayed because of wildfires, like, there's so much real life pressure and there's so much like darkness and lack of certainty and all of this, that it's like they just decided to do the most sanitized show they could, and they just put it together and it doesn't offend anyone and it's absolutely just fine, and that's a job well done in these days for whatever reason.
This year also had such fun movies that I feel like you could have worked with, like Anora is like Conclave, Dune, Emilia Perez, like Crazy, The Substance. Like, those are movies that have a lot of different angles you could sort of work with when you're coming up with funny stuff. Okay. I also, not to discuss people's appearances on the podcast,
oh, please,
but it's just like every single time Selena Gomez shows up at one of these things, I'm like, what is happening? Like, her face is getting more and more frozen.
Her mouth is opening less and less. I don't condone this.
It's so monotone. And I'm like, you were on the Disney Channel. Like, what? Like, where did the
No.
You know, like, where is the sort of like charisma or like the it's like,
I mean, she's been beaten down, okay? You can watch 17 documentaries about it, and she had lupus and all of this stuff, you know, there's reasons she doesn't like being on anymore.
But I'm like, then why are you here, girl? Like, you don't have to be here and up on the stage presenting if you don't want to be. And instead she gets up and she talks like this, and I'm just like, Selena, like, pull yourself together, woman. Like,
well, they should have let her do it with her comfort blanket, Steve Martin and Martin Short. Like, I think she's her happiest when she's around them and they're fun to watch together. I'm sure they did that bit, like, I mean, obviously at the Golden Globes or whatever, but whenever else. I mean, it's tired, but I think that's when you get her at her best. And also, I think it was just a really weird night for anyone involved with Emilia Perez. And I think that also spoke to one of my irritants of the show, is that I just continue to be disappointed by these artists who claim such liberal ideals and who will like trot out their talking points when it's selling their movie. But then with Emilia Perez, nominated 13 times, it does win 2 or 3 awards, and no one mentioned the transgender community. Absolutely no one.
Yeah.
No one brought up the trans character at the heart of it. And even though that was like the main selling point in their early campaign before the actress became problematic, and it's just insulting. It's honestly disturbing that it's like all these, I mean, it just speaks to why I'm so irritated by that film in general, but all these like white French people celebrating their wins for best writing and best music, Lord help us, and they're just incapable of taking a stand in this political climate to be like, oh yeah, and by the way, trans lives matter, and like, oh, aren't we glad that this work can be celebrated when it's seen as such a controversial existence. And I just think that just happened again and again with these movies where no one was really like taking the time to make a stand. And I know it's controversial and some people don't like when these celebrities use their words or whatever to just like puff themselves up. But again, there's a way to do it that feels sincere, and absolutely no one came through except the smaller wins for like No Other Land or honestly, yeah. That might be it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still here. People, I think.
So oh yeah. Yeah.
Had stuff to say. I mean, I think it's one thing when somebody wins and then sort of like goes off in a completely different political tangent that's separate from whatever the thing, you know, it's like if, you know, when the people win and they're like animal cruelty, you know, like no fur or whatnot. It's like, okay, celeb, like whatever, shut up. Like, just go back to acting. We don't want to hear about like furs. Not saying that that's how I feel, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Cause it's just so separated from the thing that they're talking about. But I do think like, I was surprised as well that none of the Emilia Perez people like mentioned trans people, because obviously that has been what so much of the campaign is about. And I get that you get up there and you're flustered, but at the same time, it's like, if I, and like, yeah, I guess I've never won an Oscar, but it's like, you know,
yeah, there's the
possibility
a
of something is going to happen. And I have to, and you have to have thought about your speech. And I think that you have to have sort of like, come up with a couple of like, okay, if I win, I'm doing X, Y, Z. Like, I have like some points to stick to. And especially since a lot of these people are performers anyways, it's like, okay, Zoe Saldana should have at some point in that speech, like, known that she needed to thank the trans community or whatever.
She definitely had that prepared. And right. I think it yes, all no. is just like,
well, because she managed to say that she was the first like
yeah
Cuban whatever who win. And it was like, okay, yes, I mean, we love, like, I love that
yeah.
level of diversity as well. But it's like, yeah, you could have talked about the trans people. And I was sort of surprised that in this political climate, like, I feel like the first time that Trump won, there was so yeah. much, like, everybody was saying things about Donald yeah. Trump. And I don't know if it's that people are sort of, like, discouraged now, or if people think that it's sort of less, like a less universally held opinion that Trump is bad. So they sort of don't want to go out of their way to say something about him. But
yeah,
I was just kind of surprised at the lack of people really taking any sort of political stance in their speeches, yeah. especially people who were in movies that had things sort of adjacent to what.
Yeah.
We were
well, even like Adrian Brody's like 6-minute speech,
right. yes.
he eventually gets to anti-Semitism, but it's like it was so buried that it was just sort of a about him feeling like he was never going to get there again. And it's like, okay, right. sir, he's like throwing gum at his hot girlfriend. And it's just like, it's just his so.
Wait, did you know this? His what? Girlfriend, guess who she was married to beforehand?
I don't know. Jeff Bezos.
Harvey Weinstein.
Oh my god.
Adrian Brody's girlfriend is Harvey Weinstein's ex-wife, and they had 2 children together. The children wow. that Adrian Brody mentioned wow, wow, in wow. the speech were Harvey Weinstein's children.
Oh my god, that's crazy. I mean, obviously, you know, I can't fault, I don't know her role, I don't know, whatever, victim two, blah blah blah, but Adrian Brody has some is degrees separated from some truly disgusting people at this point.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, no, I just think, again, it speaks to my disappointment in these people who have power, who have platforms, and how they choose to use those. Like, mm-hmm. and it really highlights how careless they are, because they clearly didn't want to talk about the trans star of their trans movie because, oh yeah, she turned out to have a pretty bigoted past. But it's like, you can't convince me that this movie was so important because of the voices in it and then ignore it so easily, because that just proves that it was just a vehicle for you to play like to these stereotypes of trans people, and it was just a useful tool in your film about who knows what. And like, I think that that just was a continual frustration. And I think that, you know, Kieran Culkin, he had a really cute speech and it was really fun. And it was cute that he got to do that gotcha moment with his wife. But he's in a movie about the Jewish experience and he's not Jewish. So it was pretty interesting to me how little he had to say about anything of importance, because again, it's not even his people. Like, it's just like, there were just all these moments that it highlighted how uninterested the elites are in actually thinking about like what they're selling. And I think, you know, Anora and Sean Baker were better at acknowledging like the sex workers who helped them in their film and the issues around, you know, just normalizing sex work. And I appreciated that. And then there were really beautiful wins when like the costume director won, or yeah, the No Other Land people got to talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and like really championed their cause. And it's just like everyone else was just whatever. And it was just highlighted again how I felt like these movies were just kind of, yeah, they were just good. They were just functional enough. And the actors behind them were great enough. But it's like ultimately it was just a job and they just turned it in and they got what they wanted in the end, you know?
I mean, I really liked the movies this year, I think, for the most part. And I do think that it wasn't, that there was like an exciting group of winners in a lot of ways. Like some of the speeches maybe were not great. But I do think like the winners were sort of fun. If we want to go through those.
Yeah.
I also, like, I think that some of the, like with Kieran Culkin and this sort of like Jewish situation, or and even like I guess sort of Adrian Brody and like the anti-Semitism, I do feel like that is a very difficult topic to tackle in a speech that when you have like that much emotion and that much and that short of time, theoretically, although yeah. Adrian Brody went on for 900 hours, just because of like between the Palestinian stuff and the modern sort of Jewish state and Zionism and all of that. But then also you have to balance like the Holocaust and that situation, which is obviously completely different. It's like, I think if I was Kieran Culkin, I would have been like, okay, yeah, I will also not be taking this opportunity to try to,
it's not worth figuring out. Yeah.
Bring this, like if there is, like, there obviously are lots of things to say about this, but like, am I the person to say this, and am I going to be able to say it well and the way I want to in 45 seconds when I'm like having the biggest, like craziest moment of my life? Like, I don't know if I am capable of harnessing that in the same way, or like in the way where but I do think with like Zoe Saldana, it's like, okay, the stance on trans people should be very clear. It is a very easy thing to say, like, you know, this movie only happened because of trans people. Like, I support trans people, you know, whatever. Like, it's very easy to get a clear statement across in that regard. And I think that that is a topic that is not as, like, I mean, it's obviously loaded. Yeah,
I
mean, but, like,
I would argue saying genocide is bad should be easy, but I understand, like, charged exactly because of propaganda machines and a lack of curiosity on a lot of these super privileged parts. But yeah, the Emilia Perez was definitely like the most jarring. And even when she went to her posts, like interviews, and a Mexican reporter was like, this was so very hurtful to so many Mexicans. And her answer to that was basically like, sorry you felt that way, but this could have been for women anywhere in the world. And I was like, well, your French director chose Mexico, so it was a Mexican movie. Yeah, it just kind of spoke to how, like, yeah, just like a lack of curiosity. And she was very polished in her answer, and she ultimately was like, I'd love to have a dialogue about it. But it also is just like, yeah,
it's like,
I don't know. Yeah.
No, I mean, I feel like Emilia Perez was just like so ill-informed such from the very beginning. Yeah. And was like, there was no sort of saving it. And kind of the fact that the people who got involved with it did get involved with it, I think sort of speaks to the fact that they didn't really like have a good gauge on the project to begin with. Not that, like, you know, some actors just kind of have to take things, but it's like Zoe Saldana and Selena Gomez are people who can pick whatever they want to do. And so the fact that they chose to be in that movie, I think, does sort of speak to some issues. But so the first award that they gave out was Best Supporting Actor, which went to Kieran Culkin. He's won everything this season, so like that wasn't surprising at all. I don't know, did you have any thoughts on any of the other candidates there?
No.
Then it went to the animated features, which Andrew Garfield and Goldie Hawn presented in a sort of like kind of sweet way, but sort of also awkward.
It's so awkward,
weird. And I was like, is this on a paper bit, or... this like works well, but then in execution was just sort of cringy. But Flo won, which I thought was a very fun, exciting win, because you know it's like a little Latvian movie and it was up against these like juggernauts from major studios, so I thought that was very fun.
Very cute first Latvian nomination.
And then In the Shadow of the Cypress won Best Animated Short, which was a category.
As soon as I watch the, like, because they show little clips of that usually, I don't see the shorts, so I just copy yours in my in my guesses. And as soon as I saw those samples, I was like, ugh, I should have Googled this first, because I would have selected that to win. And then it won. And I was like, ugh.
Which one did I pick? I can't even remember.
You picked like...
The Wander to Wonder was the best one by far. It was so good and funny. And I feel like everybody who I've seen has really liked it. But it was very weird. And I was kind of like, I sort of feel like the... Because basically the premise of Wander to Wonder is like somebody who is running like a Mr. Rogers Neighborhood kind of esque show. The little like creatures or people who live or who are on the show are actually real. They're like not Muppets. And then the person, like the Mr. Rogers character, dies. And so these little figurines are like trapped in this studio and sort of like beating wax and it's like this survivalist thing and they're trying to escape. And it's so fun, but it's very dark.
But I should have
In the Shadow of the Cypress was like an Iranian movie. It was very beautiful, sort of like confusing, but lyrical. Yeah. And the other ones I don't think were that good this year.
Is that the couple who were like, we didn't get our visas until...
Yes.
Yeah. Which was cute and then awkward and then funny and then awkward again, but good for them. Well,
and they were the couple who like, weren't they the ones who were like, oh no, it's your turn to read. Oh no, it's my turn to read. Like they could not figure out who was supposed to be reading off this phone. And it was like,
just repeated it again. Yeah.
But luckily they were early enough in the evening that they didn't really get played off. So that was sort of shocking. Yeah. Then we had the best costume design, which went to the Wicked person. And I thought that was another good moment of the show.
For sure. I mean, of course. He was very eloquent and it was very well deserved. And like, again, just a beloved movie and the costumes were amazing. So when Conclave was like, they made 1,000 pieces, I was like, yeah, but they're the same costume.
Right, yes.
And like, it's a pretty copy and paste situation there, if you think about it. They literally have the same uniform, but no disrespect to the artistry demanded, but it did make me laugh.
Yeah, I was also sort of, while they were all standing up there presenting their costumes, I was like, was this really the best movie costumes that we had to choose from? Because like Nosferatu's costumes were good, but like A Complete Unknown was just like 70s clothes. And then obviously the Pope, or in Conclave, it's just all of these robes that are based on, you know, other pre-existing robes. And then Gladiator was like people just wearing, you know, like rags and sandals. So I was like, we really didn't have anything more fun that we could have gone with here. Like Maria, or like even like the Beetlejuice movie, like something that had a little bit more pizzazz, but no.
It was always going to be Wicked anyways.
Yeah, it was always going to be Wicked. Then we get the screenplay awards, which Anora won original screenplay and Conclave won best adapted screenplay. I feel like this was the point in the night where I was sort of like, okay, I think Anora is maybe going to win a bunch of stuff, because Anora was up against The Brutalist and The Substance and A Real Pain, all of which I felt like, you know, could have theoretically won. Conclave was sort of, I think, won in a walk. Like, everybody thought that Conclave was going to win best adapted screenplay, which I do think, I think both of those movies have really fun scripts. So
I think Nickel Boys deserved it 100,000 times over, just because of the way it was adapted. And I don't know, I thought it was really, really good, but I knew it was a long shot.
I was so upset that Conclave, or that Nickel Boys, didn't get nominated for cinematography. It's like, that movie is so gorgeous. So, yeah, I mean, I loved the Nickel Boys adaptation, and I think it was really cleverly done. I guess I was sort of just not expecting it to win because it got so few nominations elsewhere, but it really deserved, both Nickel Boys and Sing Sing deserved a lot more than they got this season.
Yeah.
Like, those were great movies. Then we got Best Makeup and Hairstyling, which went to The Substance, which I feel like was very deserved. Was that the only win? Was that the only thing that The Substance won?
I think so.
Makeup and Hairstyling? Interesting.
I mean, what else would it have won?
We'll get to Demi Moore. I don't know. I just feel like it had such a big presence. And then so, like, I think a lot of these movies, I thought that The Brutalist was going to win more stuff. I thought that Conclave was going to win more stuff. Like, some of these ended up not winning very much. Then we got the James Bond tribute. Yeah. Very
exciting. Complete Unknown was shut out. And Conclave only won one. Substance only won one. And then, Nickel Boys, The Apprentice got nothing.
Yeah. Then we got film editing, which Sean Baker also won. So that was Anora's second win of the night. And they say that film editing a lot of times goes to the best picture winner. So the fact that it won screenplay and editing, I was like, oh, okay, Anora's going to win best picture, which I was excited about because I loved Anora.
Yeah.
And that's sort of what I wanted to win anyway. Since Challengers, which should have won editing and screenplay and basically every award that Anora won, Challengers should have won and then should have also won several others. But the fact that it was nominated for nothing.
Insulting, honestly.
Yeah. Especially when they started playing those original songs. And it's like, there's one in, we couldn't have gotten the song from Challengers in here, like, out of this crew.
I know, terrible.
Then we had Supporting Actress, which went to Zoe Saldana, which I feel like was kind of late in the show. I feel like usually they, like, give out Best Supporting Actress right away. And then we had Production Design, which also went to Wicked, which makes sense. Wicked's second win of the night. Because Wicked just won those two, right? Costumes and Production Design?
Yes.
I think? Yes. Then we had Original Song, which was sort of infuriating because it went to the song from Emilia Perez, which is a bad song in a bad movie. And then these two psychotic French people and the director all got up there, gave this long-winded speech, started singing. The music was trying to play them off. They kept singing. And it's like, I don't like, I don't need Diane Warren to win an Oscar against a good song, but I'm like, she's been nominated 16 times.
You're such a Diane Warren stan.
No, I'm like, one, the woman, like, has been doing this for so long, just give her the freaking Oscar. And I'm like, two, the thing is, the music branch thinks she deserves an Oscar, so they will nominate her every single year for a crappy song.
Well, she just needs to write a better song.
But I'm like, her song this year was like, her song this year might have been the best song of these nominees. Like, like, It's one thing when she's going up against, you know, The Greatest Showman and Coco and Barbie and whatever. It's another thing when she's going up against two songs from Emilia Perez, a song from Sing Sing that I didn't even know was in the movie, and a song from the Elton John documentary. I'm like, she should have won this. We could have, she could have taken her Oscar. We could have sent her at home. Like, I'm like, we gotta give her something so that she could stop getting nominated and taking up this spot. But then I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't understand why these awards strategists aren't thinking more about this. Because you know that Diane Warren is getting nominated for Best Original Song next year. She was nominated for the Cheetos movie. She was nominated for that like five-part thing where Cara Delevingne was a homeless person on a hotel roof. Like, she's been nominated for some heinous movies. If you are Martin Scorsese, if you're whoever, you should be like, oh, I'm going to hire Diane Warren to write the credit song for my big Oscar movie.
She doesn't write winning songs. They're not good songs.
Right, but what was the song that was at the end of The Fabelmans? You know what I mean? Like what was that? You don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But it might have won Diane Warren an Oscar. Yeah. And it definitely would have gotten The Fabelmans a nomination. Like, I'm sort of like, if you want, or if you want your movie to be seen more, it's like, just give her the song credit, and then it will at least be in awards contention. Like yes, sure, if you have a movie that's like a very awardsy movie, like, I think it's a good move. But also, if you were Twisters and you were gonna have that full album, you should have nominated, you should have had Diane Warren write
don't touch
one
the Twisters
song
album. It was perfect. No notes. I cannot have Diane Warren put a bad song on there.
Have
there were
Diane
no skits.
Warren write a song like how, like Deadpool versus Wolverine. Like, one of these, like, Disney should be hiring her to write a song that goes at the end of a Star Wars movie. Like,
yeah.
She like
that's a good
It's
plan.
A nomination that is sitting there. And if it's a bad year and the song is okay and it was from a movie that somebody actually liked,
yeah,
she would
that's
win.
True.
Like, if she had written the song from Sing Sing, it probably would have won.
But she wouldn't have written. Can you imagine? What business would she have in Sing Sing?
She has written songs that, like, Common has sung, and her, like the song from the 6888 she wrote,
yeah,
and that's
yeah.
a song about You're black
right.
male
I know,
carriers.
But I'm saying,
like,
I mean, sing, yeah, yeah, she might find common ground.
She could have written some Sing Sing song that's like, and we press on, and we march forward, and, you know, like, whatever.
Oh my God.
Like some song about freedom that, you know, vaguely uses something. Like, she could have done it. I
For
believe
sure.
in her. I
For
don't.
Sure. Nosferatu like, should have tapped her.
Right.
Should have gotten the
I'm like, she vampires. Wrote a song for the Cheetos movie. She can write a song for anything. Like, give her a break. Get the Oscar.
Yeah.
Or, like, these people are insane for not jumping on this. This is an opportunity.
You're right.
Okay. Anyways, sorry about that rant. Back to Best Documentary Short and Best Documentary Feature. Best Documentary Feature went to No Other Land, which is the Palestinian doc. And I do think that they gave the best speech of the
excellent.
Night.
Excellent. Yeah. Friggin'.
However, I was shook because the entire time I was watching the documentary, those two, like, men are sort of the stars. And they're clearly, like, very good friends. And I was like, and one of them is Jewish, and one of them is Israeli, and one of them is Palestinian. And I was like, these two people are gay. I was like, these are gay men, if I've ever seen them. Like, the way that they love each
are
other.
Are they not?
Well, and then, and I thought, like, okay, you know, they're like, none of them, neither of them seem to have a love interest in the movie. And, like, they're in this sort of homophobic culture, whatever. But then one of them referenced his daughter during the speech. And I was like, oh, well, my dream is popped of them, you know, coming to America and,
hey,
you know,
Matt,
revealing that they've loved each other
know
all
that
along.
Gay men can have kids too.
Yeah, I know that they can, Shelby, but I don't think that you can, like, it costs a lot of money. And, And I don't think that they're having a surrogate in war-torn Gaza.
Did you Google to confirm? Because this will be really embarrassing if he... There are some very wealthy families in Gaza and Israel.
Yeah, so. I saw the documentary, Shelby. Their house was getting knocked over. I don't... Unless they had secret stashes of money hidden somewhere, I don't think that that's the case.
I'm sorry. Sorry you didn't get the queer representation you wanted.
Anyways, yes, I wanted that.
I was distracted by Selena Gomez and... Wow, what's his name?
Samuel L. Jackson?
Samuel L. Jackson. They did not seem into that speech. They did not seem into that speech. I couldn't tell if it's
laughing.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow, they're nervous to clap at the wrong moment. Or it seemed like maybe Samuel L. Jackson stepped on her skirt at one point and was saying something. But
yes,
I did not like those vibes.
Yeah, bad vibes. Well, and Selena Gomez's face was all of a sudden very lit up for that, even though she'd been, you know, monotone during her entire delivery of the intro. Best documentary short went to The Only Girl in the Orchestra, which I really did like. I think it's on Netflix, and it's about the first woman who is in the New York Philharmonic, which sort of like, okay, we've seen documentaries like that before, but she's just such an interesting character, and just like listening to her talk about things and her perspective on like music and stuff, I thought was very fun.
And that was the Danish couple?
No, we will get to that. Okay. This was the, I sort of can't remember.
Oh, she had the beetle dress.
Yeah, it was like two women. Yeah. Although I was sort of surprised that this one won, because there were shorts about like, there was one about the death penalty. There was one about gun violence in schools. There was one about like police brutality. I was sort of surprised that it didn't go to like a weightier subject. Instead, they're like women playing the violin. Exactly. Yes.
100%. If it's American dark stories, they don't want them. They want international depression and local celebration. So
interesting. Then we got Best Sound, which went to Dune, and then Best Visual Effects, which went to Dune, which like, yay, we love Dune. Glad that it got something. Gearing up for Dune Part 3 when we finally get maybe a winning Best Picture.
Can't wait.
Should we hope for such a thing? Okay, then we got to Best Live Action Short, which went to I Am Not a Robot, and this was the Danish couple, who I did like.
I did like them too, and she did a cute callback to Kieran Culkin's speech by saying, like, I'm not going to get you more kids, but we don't really say it in Denmark, but I love you. And I was like, oh my god, so cute.
I also thought that all four of the other nominees in this were sort of bad, so I was excited that this movie won. Liked it the best, even though it was sort of the kind of frivolous. It's basically about a woman who's working at an office, and she's trying to do the like CAPTCHA test to prove that she's not a robot, and then she keeps failing it, and somebody else in the office is like, well, maybe you're a robot, and she's like, what? And then it turns out that she is a robot, and that's how she figures out was the CAPTCHA test, which I just think is a funny premise.
That is funny. But you did not predict that, and so I did not predict that. So
well, because I sort of thought it was a little too silly to win the category.
Yet you nominated Wonder to Wander.
Well, that one I really like, but this one I felt like I Am Not a Robot was silly, and Alien was about like ice and this phenomenon, which I didn't realize happened, where people who are, I don't know if it's like illegal immigration, people who are not in the country necessarily in ways that they're supposed to, but who have interviews to be like, to become a citizen legally, when they make their appointment, ICE will show up and arrest them at their appointment and deport them, which I didn't like realize was a phenomenon. But basically, yeah, it's like even when you're trying to get your visa or whatever legally, that they
will.
And goes to your point. Then we had Best Cinematography, which went to The Brutalist, which I think was worthy. Yeah, did you have any quibbles with that?
Yeah, no, I
well, you haven't seen The Brutalist, so
I haven't. I mean, the bits look nice.
Then we had best international feature, which I do think was an interesting one, because the prevailing wisdom would have been that it should have gone to Emilia Perez, because that obviously had the most nominations. But I'm Still Here won instead, which I really just think goes to show how much Carlos Sofia Gascon tanked the Emilia Perez. Like, I don't support bigotry in any capacity, but if we're going to uncover a bigot, it is nice that we found one who just happened to be representing the movie that I hated the most.
That's true. Of the field, it worked out well for
and
us.
It really just like crushed the chance of winning any other Oscar. Yeah. So that
it's
was
a
nice.
Beautiful silver lining.
Brutalist won best score. Yay. Then we got to our favorite part of the show, which was the tribute to Quincy Jones. I know you loved that. Would you like to speak on that again?
No, I would not.
Queen Latifah singing Isan Down the Road. And then we get to the big awards. Best actor went to Adrien Brody, whose speech we discussed for quite some time.
Yeah.
Then best director went to Sean Baker, which again, I think we sort of knew was going to happen after he'd already won two Oscars in the night. And then the Hulu feeds shut out. Were you watching this on Hulu?
I was not. I was watching it on Fubo, but I had recorded it and it ended right at the hour mark. So I too was cut off from this best actress moment.
Yeah. Then everybody online was like, wait, what's happening? Like, it's turned off. We can't see anything. And that was when like really the most exciting award, underdog surprise situation happened, which was Mikey Madison winning for Anora over Demi Moore for The Substance, which like I guess throughout the evening like maybe we like those seem to be the two front runners, and with Anora winning so much stuff it wasn't like then that surprising that Mikey Madison won, but Demi Moore,
I mean, honestly just highlights the importance of a film like The Substance to watch an aged beauty lose to a very young, very thin, very beautiful brunette. So Demi Moore should feel proud that her movie transcends even the cinematic screen and plays out yet again in real life for her. So poetic justice, honestly, was served.
Very, very Elizabeth Sparkle of her to
exactly.
won the Oscar here and been beat by a young person. I mean, I do think that obviously people were not thrilled last year. I think either when Emma Stone beat out Lily Gladstone for the Oscar, but I do think that there's something with Emma Stone's performance last year and Mikey Madison's performance this year that's just like, it's such a big, like, balls to the walls performance in this movie that's like all out and is basically the entire thing. And I think with both of them, but especially like Mikey Madison, you watch her giving these speeches and interviews and it's like this woman is nothing like the character that she's playing in this movie. Mm-hmm. And the transformation is just crazy. Like her the performance in Anora is very, very, very good. And I liked Demi Moore in The Substance, but you know, it's like she's on the ground in the closet for half the movie. So I don't know. I
think you've captured. Yeah. The louder performances do tend to win, whether or not they're the better ones. I don't have an opinion about these two. You know, I think either would have made sense.
Who did you want to win this category? Carla?
I just didn't care that much about these nominations. I like Mikey Madison. I mean, that was probably my favorite role of these. I don't think Cynthia Erivo needed to be here for this movie. I think,
but she was staring down the camera.
I know, and I think if anything, part two will be allow more of her a chance to really wow. But I think they just couldn't nominate Ariana without also nominating Cynthia.
Yes,
and that's the awkward truth. I would have put Zendaya here and I would have wanted her to win, but alas.
I would have put June Squibb there, and oh, I wanted yeah. her to win.
Oh,
this
yeah.
This should have that been too. June Squibb's Oscar, like, yes. in a walk. She was so yeah. much better than all of these people.
Yes.
And even somehow managed to be the best part of the entire Oscars show that she wasn't even nominated.
I know. Icon. We are
really going to have to count on this movie that she's in, that Scarlett Johansson directed, to really, you know, sort of...
It's her last chance.
I'm like, I will be voting for that movie.
Running out of time.
No matter what happens.
Yeah, get Dan Warren to write a song for that one, honestly.
Right, exactly, exactly. Now you're catching on. And then Best Picture went to Anora, which, like, obviously we sort of knew at that point, which I was thrilled about, because Anora is one of my favorite movies of the year.
Very cute.
I think it's, like, I also really did obviously love Nickel Boys and Dune Part 2, but...
Yeah,
I'm sort of like, Dune will probably win for Part 3. I don't think there was ever, like, a real shot in Nickel Boys winning, unfortunately. So yeah. I was very pleased that Anora beat out The Brutalist and A Complete Unknown and Amelia Perez and The Substance and Wicked. So,
oh, can I say, though?
Yes.
I get where he was coming from. Sean Baker's, like, third speech of the night he dedicates to cinema and independent cinema. Specifically telling people to, like, go to theaters and yes. go to movies. Sure, yeah, I love it. But what rankles me is sort of this, like, really it's focused on us as audience members. Like, we're tasked with going to movie theaters. And I don't...
It's not.
I mean, I just feel like he could have been more specific, because, yes, he's eventually says, like, you guys need to make independent movies, and thank you to my studio for, like, pushing this for theaters or whatever. But I felt like the whole beginning, I was like, just tell these rich people to, like, freaking donate to these to these cinemas, or like, start up, like, tickets are just outrageous. Like, I'm sorry, people cannot spend $20 a head to go to a movie theater these days. So, like, someone else has to give, literally. And I just feel like there was a moment where he could have rightfully called out the wealthy listeners, the wealthy attendees, instead of, like, sort of saying, like, you guys need to be better at taking your kids to the theaters, because it's not cheap and it's not easy. And I think that they are forgetting that part.
I think that, I mean, I guess I don't have, like, a transcript of the speech in front of me, but the vibe that I was getting, and maybe this is just because I've seen enough people sort of give this speech over the years, of, like, that they're sort of complaining to the distributors and to the, like, they're complaining about streaming and sort of the fact that this type of little movie, like, either wouldn't get made anymore, or even if it doesn't get made, they're like, okay, well, it'll go straight to streaming. It won't be in theaters very long, unless you're, like, a Neon or A24 or Mubi or something. It's like, you're not, like, putting these little movies in theaters, really.
Yeah.
And so I think he's saying, like, look, like, if you have a good movie and you do put it in theaters, like, you could, you know, have something that the audience really connects with and gets Oscars and does really well and does make a decent amount of money, because the movie only costs $6 million. And now Anora is a Best Picture winner, and Neon, for the next 100 years, will get to make a decent amount of money off of this as it's on streaming and gets re-released. You know what I mean? It's like,
okay, I'll accept that reading of it. I, again, could have dealt with more specificity.
But also, maybe you should be taking me to the theater more.
I do.
Saying, shut up, little
I
girl.
Do.
Watch Flow. We're not leaving and wasting good money on this.
Penny has been in theater so much more than any other child her age that I know. It's honestly embarrassing.
How old do you... Okay, some questions about children in the theaters.
Yeah, please.
Can she have, like, A-list? Like, does she have A-list? Or do you have to pay for her individually?
With the new price increase, they just announced that you can be under 18 now. I don't know if they'd allow a 4-year-old, but we should look into it. The problem is that there's these slow months where there aren't any kid movies.
And then, otherwise, is a kid's ticket cheaper than an adult ticket? Like, what's the
kid's ticket is technically cheaper, but it's still, like, $15.
Okay, so it's not like, oh, a ticket. Like, yeah. I mean, it's like
a matinee versus, you know, it's like that sort of decrease. Okay,
so it would be good to get her onto the steps,
yeah,
especially as she's especially once she's sort of, like, aging into more, like,
yeah, yeah, Once she's in strictly PG in the PG.
Yes.
PG section, we can start doing the monthly subscription for her.
Because she would probably like Denora, no? There was dancing, there was, you know, running around.
That's the other thing that was crazy about this opener, is usually it's like, la-di-da, we love movies, but this opens with him climbing in and out of Demi Moore's back, and I had to cover Penny's eyes because it was like, it was absolutely obscene. It was very upsetting. And so at one point in the middle of the show, like an hour after she'd seen that, well, after that part, she was like, what happened to that woman? And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, I saw a little bit of it. I was like, oh my God, I shouldn't tell this story. Now someone's going to call CPS.
And that person's me. Actually, I'm going to do it right after this. No, okay. This is my pitch. So I emceed a lot of things in college. Like me and my best friend in college, we were very funny. And we like emceed like the talent show and, you know, just like a bunch of those kinds of things. Yeah. And we like loved SNL and like wrote our scripts and had good banter and stuff. And I thought it was very fun. Everybody liked us. We kept getting rehired for multiple gigs.
I love that.
And we did something during one of the talent shows, which I thought was so funny and worked so well. And I don't understand. And I feel like somebody should use it for the Oscars, which was that we were the hosts, but we were sort of like, oh, but actually, like, you know, we're sort of like washed up and we really want to win the talent show. So we kept sort of like doing talents like in between the other people's talents and then like having somebody get mad at us. And I think that what somebody should do, since the room is so full of like producers and directors and whatever, is to take on the shtick of like, oh, I'm going to use this opportunity to get cast in a movie by one of these people. And then keep doing bits where you're sort of like doing the drama or like you're acting out scenes from the movie. Like, I think that there's something there that would be a lot of fun if you gave it to the right person.
Yeah.
And I think that would be such an easy way to like incorporate, you know, like the crowd and the movies, and you could sort of like be trying to do banter with like Ralph Fiennes, like pretending that you're doing a scene with him, but like he's not having it.
With someone. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I like that. I like that pitch. That's a good idea. So your pitch is more funny, self-disparaging comedy. My pitch is make movies fun again.
Yes, but then also together. But then also more political speeches.
More political speeches, correct. You know, get them in with a good montage. And then prove there's more important things.
Yes. We want, I love Wicked, but also have you heard about police brutality? It's bad.
Yeah, these people should be more connected is what I mean. I contain multitudes so they can too, you know. There's room to be both, Matt.
To be fun and annoying.
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you for understanding.
No, believe me, I get it. I get that urge. Okay, so maybe not the best Oscars ever. Definitely better than that year that Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody won a bunch of stuff. I do feel like in Green Book, not that bad. No, I feel like the trajectory of the Oscars since they have like opened the Academy and made it more international, like has that solved all of our problems? No, but have we gotten, I think, a lot more interesting movies nominated and also a lot funner list of winners? Yes,
because it's just hard for me to say with the complete shutout of challengers. I don't know how to feel.
Well, yes,
I don't know how to feel. I really don't know if I can trust.
And believe me,
I do
agree with you on that front. But like the fact that we've had Parasite and Everything Everywhere All at Once and Anora all in like this couple year span, I think is
so fun. Well, speaking of Parasite, Mickey 17.
There's someone in your basement. Oh, yes. Mickey 17. Yes, that's what we'll be doing next week. Oh, I'm so excited. I haven't seen this yet. I didn't get invited to a thing and I'm
so sorry.
Whatever. I I had a surgery this past week, and so I have been at home, so I wasn't clamoring to get to these theaters, but I am very excited to see it this weekend.
Me too.
Ugh, I love Robert Pattinson. Will it be as good
as
Tenet?
He's not gay.
Unclear.
I'm sorry to say that. I don't know if he has
children. Yeah, there's a lot of different versions of him in this movie. One of them might be. No, what I wanted was a romance between these two people.
I know. Oh, yeah. You were shipping them.
I was shipping them. Yeah. Yes. No, I did not want to be dating either of them.
Well, but maybe he's bi. Maybe he'll come into his queerness.
There's no such thing as bi people, Shelby. Yeah. They're made up by the government.
God.
Okay. Anyways, I'm getting distracted here. You can't be bringing up bi people and trying to throw me off at the last minute. We will be back next week to talk about Mickey 17 and Robert Pattinson. Thank you all for listening. Also, fun fact, our 300th episode is coming around the corner.
And I think can't we're doing even a believe
mailbag. So Shelby's going to be asking for questions on social media and such as and so forth. And if you have questions for us for the mailbag episode, please send them to her so she can collect them for the episode.
DM me on Instagram. I don't even know if we have an email anymore.
We definitely do somewhere, but I have not looked at it in years. So unclear what's waiting on that. Probably someone saying, you guys are so talented. Would you like a network show?
Wait, you guys thought about coming to the opening of the Hunger Games stage musical?
No.
I'm going to check right now. Fingers crossed.
Okay. We've been on one today. My gosh, lunacy. And this has been a long episode. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye.